We can start now. 나모 타사 바가와토 아라하토 삼마 삼부타사 나모 타사 바가와토 아라하토 삼마 삼부타사 나모 타사 바가와토 아라하토 삼마 삼부타사 부탄 다만 상가 나마사미. So today we are doing reading the Sutta 16. That is Majjhima Nikaya Sutta 16, Chetokila Suttas. You know, sitting beside me, she's Sister Chetokila. So, but it's not exclusively for her though. Even though it's the Sutta is Sister Chetokila, it's a Chetokila Suttas. That is a wilderness in the heart. So I will start reading and then I will explain each of the qualities that the Buddha's mentioned. And then after finish, and then do you have any questions, you can raise up and put your hand up and ask. You can. So Sutta 16, Chetokila Suttas, the wilderness in the heart. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus, Venerable Sir," they reply. The Blessed One said this, "Bhikkhus, that any bhikkhu who has not abandoned five wilderness in the heart and not severed five chakras in the heart should come to growth, increase, and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline that is impossible. What, bhikkhus, are the five wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned? Here, a bhikkhu is doubtful, uncertain, undecided, and unconfident about the teacher, and thus his mind does not incline to ardor, devotion, perseverance, and striving. As his mind does not incline to ardor, devotion, perseverance, and striving, that is the first wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned." So that means he said that the first one is to do not have the faith, confidence in the Buddha. There's the teacher, there's the Buddha. So there has no faith, because it's important that we have the faith, because but have to come from the right understanding. For example, like someone have doubt whether maybe, you know, the Buddha is a special being, and it's impossible, because nowadays a lot of people saying that it's impossible to get enlightened. So then it'd be better, you know, just to practice, you know, is to reborn in a better place or in heavenly realm. I heard some people say that, you know, even some Buddhists, they said that. So they find that it's impossible to become enlightened. So they have doubts whether this maybe is beyond me, only maybe whether Buddha is exists, and they have doubt, and whether that is a Buddha is not just ordinary being, and you know that could be able to get enlightened. So when you have doubt, you will not arouse that, you will not inspire, and you will not arouse that the energy to practice, isn't it? Because you have doubt. Like for example, something that that you don't you have no faith. So yes. This is more. This is the they have the confidence and the faith in the Buddha. So that is like, because like we have no faith, but this faith is come from, is have the right understanding. For example, some people might have a lot of faith in the Buddha, and then they think that the Buddha, you know, that they pray to Buddha, may the Buddha, you know, they get something out of the, they pray very hard, and they believe in the Buddha, they have a very strong faith. But that is not come from the right understanding, that is from the wrong view. you know, maybe some people think that, you know, they have the faith in the Buddha, so maybe their life, everything that will go on well for them. And then there's something that's, you know, maybe there's they have something difficulties in their life. Then they say, okay, you see, it's not working. I have faith in the Buddha. I pray so hard, and still there is some misfortune, you know, happened to me. So that they have, this is not come from the right understanding, and also will not the mind will not incline other. That means that you have the inspiration. That you then you give rise to that determination. That is the energy. That is the, this kind of energy is the noble energy. It's not the kind of energy that's like you want to do something, you want to get something. That not the kind of energy. So later the Buddha will explain that in terms of the Idikada, how so this is a noble power. So. For example, like someone have this wrong view of the Buddha, of the Buddha, so they take Buddha as a god, so they have very strong faith in the Buddha, but that is not from the right view, not from the right understanding. That is wrong view. So if you don't have the faith and you have doubt and you are not confident that we be able to practice, put into practice, then you will not strive. We will not persevere, isn't it? We will not do that because, you know, I am not really sure that's whether Buddha, he himself got enlightened, you know. So then you will not arouse that, you know, the energy to do the practice, to put forth effort into practice. So that's it. That is what it means, that you have no faith. So because like sometimes because of you arouse faith, then you put forth effort. So but sometimes it's not necessary that you have to start with the Buddha. You have faith in the Buddha, and then you have the faith in the Dhamma. So sometimes can be the other way around. So now the second one, the Buddha said, that is, again, a bhikkhu is doubtful, uncertain, undecided, and unconfident about the Dhamma, as his mind does not incline to other perseverance, striving, devotion. That is the second wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. That is that you have doubts. About the Dhamma, that's the Buddha's teaching, the truth. Like the Buddha's teaching is all, the Dhamma is all, always referred to the law of karma. So if someone have doubt, you know, that, oh, I don't believe that is, you know, that is rebirth, that is this law of karma, and whatever we do have no consequence. So you will not really strive, you know, to really put for effort, you know, to really live a skillful life. So you will not have that inspiration. For example, like someone come across to the Buddha's teaching, and they say, oh yeah, it's very inspiring. Who said that? And they say, oh yeah, it's the Buddha. Because of they have the faith in the Dhamma, the teaching, then they have the faith in the Buddha. So it can be the other way around. Because you listen to the Dhamma and you feel so inspired. So like all of you come here, oh, you listen to the suttas and you feel inspired, and then you go back, you put for effort, you know, to do the practice. This is the second wilderness in the heart. Because what it means, the wilderness in the heart, that is, it means that is a barrier, like a stump. You know, some they translate as a stump. Chetokila is a stump, or more like a barrier, like it's stop you from grow, have any growth, you know, stop you from growing further. Because of, if you have this in your heart, that will stop you from going further. So when you don't have the faith, not confidence in the Buddha, and not confidence, have no faith in the Dhamma, so we'll stop you, because you will not put forth effort. You will not strive. You will not put forth effort. You will not persevere to keep going. Because you have doubt. So if you have that, that is really a stumbling block. It really is a barrier. Stop us from going further. So that is the second wilderness in the heart that the Buddha mentioned. So again, a bhikkhu is doubtful, uncertain, undecided, and unconfident about the Sangha, as his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. That is the third wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. So, for example, like some people that come across to a monks or nuns, that they find them are very inspiring, and the way they conduct themselves, and they're full of loving kindness, and they feel that, you know, that when they be with this person, that they become very peaceful and very calm, and they feel very inspiring. Then they will start to put forth and say, oh, I would like to, like, you know, because they have someone that right in front of him, that in front of the person that, you know, they have this very peaceful and calm. And actually, bhikkhu Bodhi is one of the very good example. When he was about 10, the first monk that he met, that is a Vietnamese monk. And the first time he met, he was very young, and he was really struck by the tranquility of this monk, very peaceful and very calm, the serenity, and he was really give him a very strong impact on his mind. That he said, "Oh wow, I haven't seen a being like that before, a man." So calm and so peaceful, and really have that strong impact in his mind. And as all of you know, even this Majjhima Nikaya, and Bhikkhu Nyanamoli and Bhikkhu Bodhi translate these suttas. So actually, he's the one who see a monk that, you know, on the street. He didn't even know this monk. He's just, you know, walking on the street. And he was so inspired by how this monk so peaceful and so calm. And he was inspired, and then later he became a monk. So then sometimes that, you know, the Sangha, that means that those who listen to the Buddha's teaching, then they put into practice, there to get enlightened. So then this the Sangha. So if you have the faith, you have the confidence in the Sangha, then you have the confidence in the teaching, and then you have the confidence in the Buddha, the teacher. So they say sometimes it's not necessary that you have to come from the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. You can come from, you have met some monk or nuns in your life that really inspire you, and then you start to get to practice. Then you can go from the Sangha to the Dharma and the Buddha. So maybe from the Dharma to the Sangha, or to the Buddha. So it's not necessary that you have to go according to the sequence, you know, from the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So again, a bhikkhu is doubtful, uncertain, undecided, and unconfident about the training, as his mind does not incline to other, perseverance, devotion, and striving. That is the fourth wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. That is the training. Actually, is not only the training rules. Like, for example, like here when the Buddha speak to the monks, it's not only referred to the training rules, not only referred to the Patimokkhas, you know, the Vinaya rules. It's not referred to that. It's only part of that. That is the sila, only part of that. So actually, it's referred to the whole path of practice. That is the Noble Eightfold Path. That is, you have to have the sila, samadhi, and panya. That is morality. So morality is the foundation for a peaceful mind, the cultivation of the mind. So the samadhi actually is not only a lot of people think that it's only only sitting in meditation. That is the cultivation of the mind. So there is a cultivation of the minds. You have this. The samadhi groups have three. So you got to have the mindfulness, stillness, calmness, and effort. The effort actually is always referred to the fall right effort. Because if with mindfulness itself, it's not enough. You're just knowing, you know, just mindful, you know. So for example, you have the, you have unwholesome thoughts arises. So you have this anger. So it's unwholesome state of mind. And you're aware of that. But because of you haven't cultivated the calmness, the stillness, you not be able to hold yourself. And then each time you think that I should have hold myself, I should have no not to do that again, we do that again because you don't have the stillness, the calmness to hold the mind. So actually, it's not easy to have unreactive awareness. So you need to have the calmness, the stillness, the consent. There's some that translate as concentration. You be able to hold the mind and not to react. And also you have to put for effort. That is a forward effort to stop the mind, to have a break. You know, to stop the mind from going further. So to stop the mind, to avoid this unwholesome state of mind, like anger or greediness, you know, you stop that, avoid that. But if it's already arisen, then to abandon this unwholesome state of mind, to abandon this, for example, ill will or anger, then you replace by a thought of loving kindness, so a wholesome thoughts. Then you maintain, you know, replace that, you maintain that. So when you maintain that, so the then this unwholesome state of mind will not arise. This is this four right effort. So if these three together, you know, is this mindfulness, stillness, and effort, right effort. If these three, they intertwined together, they become very powerful and solid. If you have only mindfulness, it's snapped very easily because it's not strong, it's not powerful enough, because it's not solid. But only with concentration, some people try very hard concentration, and that without the mindfulness, and they just focus. I remember someone told me that when we were in the monastery, and someone staying in the monastery, and some of the food goes off, and this person said, "Oh, I didn't know that the food is already off, because I just focus on chewing." So I mean, it's not very good, you know. It's just focus, you know, just the focus, you know, itself. So not knowing, they're not even aware that what is that. But it's not wrong that we know the taste, whether it's sour or sweet, you know. That knowing, you're mindful of what we are eating, isn't it? Not only the chewing itself, focus, you know. There's sometimes it's become blur. It's not no awareness, not bright the mind, you know. You just chewing, and then the food rotten. They don't even know that they just swallow it. And that is no. Then this is how only the awareness, and also you have to have the, you know that there is unwholesome state of mind arises. You know that, you know, you if you react to that emotion, it's going to lead us to suffering. You know, we cause us harm to others and to ourselves. We know the danger of that. You're aware of that. And then you'll be able to put for effort. And also you have the awareness, and also you have the stillness, the calmness to be able to hold yourself. Your mind is strong enough to hold. Of course, sometimes easy, said and done, and don't do this, don't do that to avoid that. But sometimes again and again, a lot of people find themselves that they shouldn't have done that, but they still couldn't hold, couldn't bite back their tongue and not to say something. So you do need that, you know, is this tree is important. This the cultivation of the mind is not only mindfulness, it's not only stillness, and it's effort. These three have to come together. Of course, this have to be supported by the sila, morality. So the morality is important. That is a foundation for a peaceful mind. Because if you are not, so because you have done something that you know that is causes, I mean, harm to others, and also is to ourselves too, isn't it? If you have done something, you know, that is not, you feel that is not quite right, and your mind go back, you go on and on and on. It's very difficult to be peaceful. It's just natural. It's just like the Buddha said, it's natural. You know, there is a, you live a virtuous life, you expect that, that you lead to gladness when your mind, when you have, when you live, when you are a virtuous person. It's natural that you have the gladness. You feel, when you do something good, you feel good about yourself. That is natural. The Buddha said, whether you want it or not, it's happened by itself. It's natural. It naturally leads you to that direction. So when you have the gladness, then you have this joy, you have the energy. So when you have the joy, you have the energy, then you have this happiness. So that's why it's always happiness come first before the stillness. So you have the joy, then the tranquility, then you have the happiness, then your mind still. Because why? When you're happy, then your mind, you're content. You don't want to go anywhere. You're just happy to be there. You're just happy to in this moment. Why some people run away from this moment? Because they're not happy. Usually people that they're restless because they're unhappy. When someone is unhappy, they're restless. The mind always wander off. So they say it's important the happiness. If you want to cultivate a peaceful mind, to develop the wisdom, happiness actually is the prerequisites. That's why the Buddhist, this path, the path actually is a happy path. You need to have the happiness first, to come first. Then only you'll be able to focus. Only through the still mind, the peaceful, the still mind where the insight arises from, when the five entrances abandon. Then you have the clarity of mind. Then you can see things as they really are. You see one thing leading to another. And it's happened by itself. I mean, it's not through willpower. It's not through try to control and make it. You can't make it happen. It's happened by itself. So the morality, so it's a foundation for a peaceful mind. So a peaceful mind is a foundation for development of this wisdom. So the whole training, the whole path, the training actually is referred to the Noble Eightfold Path. That is the Sila Samadhi Panya, this whole path of practice. So if you have no confidence, have no faith in this training, the Noble Eightfold Path, you will not strive, isn't it? You will not persevere. You will not arouse the energy to do the practice. You won't. That's why this is the fourth wilderness in the heart. So if we have this wilderness in the heart, there is a barrier that stops us from going further to have growth in the Dharma. So then the Buddha go down to the fifth wilderness in the heart. He said, again, a bhikkhu is angry and displeased with his companions in the holy life, resentful, callous towards them. And thus, his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. As his mind does not incline to other devotions, perseverance, and striving, that is the fifth wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. So if someone constantly have a lot of ill will, anger towards the companion in the holy life. It's just like, for example, if in the family you have a lot of anger you towards your partners, you know, or maybe in your place, you know, with your colleague, you know, constantly you have lots of ill will, that actually you will not have aroused that inspiration because your mind is disturbed. And you're obsessed with that, you know. Each time you come back, because normally when you have a lot of anger, then you give rise to, very easily you get depressed. So when you depress, the energy is really low. Just imagine you constantly, your mind is just obsessed with that. You think you will have energy to practice, to arouse the energy. No, you can't, because the mind is just constantly, you go back, you're thinking about at home, this person said that, that person said that, and that is really a stumbling block. This is really stop us from going further. Because you always think that the problem is outside. Actually, it's not. So the anger is arise within our own mind. So sometimes we thought that it's a person made me angry. The person is the one who they are the one. They make me angry because of them. My suffering is come from the other person. It's just like yesterday I mentioned about one of the lady. Just recently, she told me that when she was really stressed out, she planned. She said she really had the planning to kill her boss. She do all the planning. She said she was, because sometimes that moment she was thinking that her suffering is come from the boss. The boss gave us too much work, and she said she worked till midnight. And the next morning, as she still take work back home to work till 3 a.m. And she go back to work again. And to a point that she's completely stressed out. She said that she becomes depressed. She was really depressed, a lot of anger. She depressed. She planned to kill her. And then she planned that after killing her boss, she's going to jump down from the, because she was working in Singapore, have a lot of these high-rise buildings. She planned that, you know, she jumped down from the building. She said, this is what she planned. And when she told her sister said, you're crazy. You just changed your job. Why you want to kill your boss? But that moment you don't, because we get stuck, you know. That moment, because our mind, once we think that that object is a problem, so we get stuck in. All we think is that how bad is the person is. And then again and again we get, you know, we lost. Sometimes it's just amazing people can, some people commit suicide because of small thing. Because you focus on that, it's manifest, and then you become unbearable. You think that that is your problem. So your mind is there because of anger. So then you not be able to live harmoniously with your companion in the holy life or your partners because they have lots of anger. Then you're not at ease and at peace, and that is really draining. You have no energy. You cannot strive. You have no energy to practice because it's really draining. Especially with this unwholesome state of mind. You know, again, your mind, you go in there. So that's why if the problem is, if you can see that it's come from ourselves. So when we have that, so we ask ourselves, do I have the thoughts of loving kindness towards that person? So if we can, so at least we can wish ourselves that at least I have no ill will towards that person. Then at least you know, we take away, have a break, you know, from really go on and on. Because once we go in, like we suck in. And then we just get lost. So when you have that, you can't arouse the energy at all, no energy. So that's why sometimes we on and it disturbs the mind. So there is the anger. So actually, in the other suttas, the Buddha did mention about how to deal with this unwholesome state of mind, especially the anger. In this which sutta, actually the Buddha did mention that. One of the suttas of Buddha did mention that there is a five steps, you know, to stop the mind. I think there is a Vitakka Santana Sutta, the removal of distracting thoughts. That's the Buddha did mention how we when we have this unwholesome thoughts. For example, you have this anger, ill will towards someone. So you feel like, I'm going to strangle him. You know, it's really angry. So the Buddha said that, you know, then you have to replace the thought of loving kindness. You know, try to, you know. So after doing that, the Buddha said, that is the first step. And then it doesn't work. and you still want to strangle that person, then you come to the second step. Then you reflect on the danger of that. You know, the danger of if you react and then you go on and on, you know, to have this anger, then you do something that will hurt yourself and hurt others, isn't it? So you reflect on the danger of that. Then after doing that, you still very angry. You still want to strangle that person. So the Buddha said, you go to the third step. That is, you try to remove yourself, like not to pay attention on that. Or if you can physically remove yourself, then it's good. Walk away, that is the best way. But if you can't, then you try to not to pay attention to that. Maybe pay attention to other things, or not to focus on that. So the Buddha said, so that is the third step. So he said, after doing that, you still want to strangle that person. So you have to come to the fourth step already. The fourth one, they said you pacify the thought. That is, you maybe you use something like you keep telling yourself like calm down, because when you put your attention to the noting, you know, to the words like calm, so then your attention is not on the person, isn't it? Then on the words like calm, make peace. So then it's a break. Then you will not go further. They help you to go, you know. Then after that, after the fourth step, you still want to strangle that person. So there is no more. The fifth one is the last step, the Buddha said. So you really have to clench your teeth, that you have to suppress yourself not to do that. Because you're going to strangle someone. So, but this one, you do it with awareness. It's not that you're not knowing. That if you go further, you will do something that causes a lot of harm to yourself and to others. Because you're going to harm someone, then you have to suppress. But of course, you after doing the fourth step, that is the last one. But if you always do that, you know, when anger come up, you just suppress, then it's no good. Then you become a mental habitual pattern that you're suppressing all the time. So when you suppress all the time, it will explode. Then that is not the... Usually if you follow instruction, by the time you go to fourth step, anyhow, your anger will subside quite a bit, you know. After you try the first step, not working, you try the second one, the third, the fourth, and then, you know, come to the fourth, I mean, pretty much, you know, your anger will, you know, subside quite a bit. So that is in the other suttas the Buddha did mention, but I just gave you the gist of the suttas, and you can read the suttas about that. You know, they say it's important, if you have a lot of anger, then really stop us from striving, you know, stop us to arouse the energy, because it's raining, you have no energy. So that is the fifth wilderness in the heart, the Buddha said, that is stop us from have the growth in the Dhamma, the fulfillment. So then the Buddha said, these are the five wilderness in the heart that he has not abandoned. So now the Buddha went on to say, what, bhikkhus, are the five shackles in the heart that he has not severed? Here, a bhikkhu is not free from lust, desire, affections, thirst, fever, craving for sensual pleasure, and thus his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. As his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance, and striving, that is the first shackles in the heart that he has not severed. So, that is we craving, we attach to the sensory pleasure. So that is the senses, we attach to that. So then the shackles, that means that we bind by that, we've been bound by that. So then we cannot escape. That is the one who tie us down, the sensory pleasure. So like for example, it's just constantly that, you know, if our mind like constantly thinking about you know, getting a good food, you know, then your energy is all going to there. Actually, this energy is going out. That's this kind of energy the Buddha said, this kind. Of course, you know, you have the kind of, the Buddha never denied the happiness from the senses. You do have happiness, but the kind of happiness is not the wholesome happiness. This is unwholesome happiness. This kind of happiness leads us to more suffering, will not lead us to peace. Only the happiness within, the Buddha always encourages us to pursue the happiness within ourselves. Only that happiness within ourselves, it leads to peace and calm. Because this kind of happiness is going out, will not lead us to peace, to calm. For example, like you listen to a Dhamma and you feel if you're inspired and you have lots of joy, you know, after listening to the teaching, then because this is not rely on the senses, because it's within yourself. So it's not dependent on the senses, but it's independent. So within yourself. So normally with the inspiration, so with the joy, that leads you to, you have the energy, and then again, the joy is one of the factor of enlightenment that leads you to peace and happiness and peace, and then development of the wisdom once again. And this is how. That is, if we persuade the kind of happiness from the senses, then that is, we bound by that, then we will not have growth in the Dharma. We will not have a fulfillment. We will not have progress in our practice. So this is the first shackles that the Buddha mentioned. Then again, a bhikkhus is not free from lust, desire, affection, thirst, fever, and craving for the body, as his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. That is the second shackles in the heart that he has not severed. Then, that is like we attach to the body. So we think that, you know, we attach to this body, we think that, you know, we have this for example, myself when I was young, when I was in my 20s, so I was very attached to my appearance, you know. So I like to go to beauty salon. I spend hours there, and I even tattoo my eyebrow. So I was thinking, so I don't have to do it every day, you know. You save the problem. Then this is the attachment to the body, and then you use lots of energy by thinking that, you know, spend a lot of time, you know, doing that. So if you spend time there, you will not arouse that energy, you know, to striving, you know, to practice, isn't it? You will not persevere. It's not, you don't have the inspiration, you know. Because it's just a craving, because we attach to this body so much, attach to our appearance. We want people to praise us, oh, you look nice, you know. We attach to that because they give us a sense of self, who we are. So we attach to ourselves, you know, to our own body, the Buddha said, you know. Then this is also, we bound by that. So if we have that, if we do not, the Buddha said, you have not severed this one, the attachment to the body, then be bound by that, then we will not have growth in the Dharma, we will not have progress. So in the Dharma, then the Buddha continued to say, a bhikkhu is not free from lust, desire, affection, thirst, fever, and craving for form, as his mind does not incline to utter perseverance, devotion, and striving. That is the third shackles in the heart that he has not severed. And this is that it's more like attachment to the form actually is also referred to attachment to the other people or the things that we want. Like we craving for a new car, we craving for things, we craving for material things. So we strive to get that. So that is not the right striving. that is the, this is the wrong effort. So we sometimes we strive very hard to get what we want. We strive to get the material thing. We strive to have all those enjoyment, you know, I have an indulge in this sensory pleasure. So this, not this kind of striving, not to strive to get things. So actually the striving is to stop. So it's very difficult to stop, isn't it? So we strive to stop and not strive to get things. So that is we crave for things, you know, material things. That is the third shackles that the Buddha mentioned in the heart. Then that he has not severed. So this is the third shackles. So then again, a bhikkhu eats as much as he likes until his belly is full and indulges in the pleasures of sleeping, lolling, and drowsing, and his mind does not incline to other perseverance, devotions, and striving. That is the fourth shackles in the heart that he has not severed. That the that is that, like sometimes people they like the pleasure of like drowsiness, like you just drowsy, you know, because this is one of the way that some people use it as a way to, because it's unskillful to face the pain in their life, the emotion, the negative emotion. So they try to run away by using this. So sometimes people, like some people, when they are depressed, you sleep a lot. And this is one of the way to escape, you know, to away, you know, running away from looking at dealing with our looking at our pain, our problem. I remember when I was in Thailand, so the place that we stay actually is the women section, actually is the kutis there, actually is old cemetery that we stay. And one of the lady there, she told me that how she have lots of fear. She was really terrified. Initially, she was quite okay until one day that because we have someone pass away, the cremate in the monastery. And for Thai custom, they have the ceremony of washing the hand, you know, before the cremate. So she's look at the dead body, the face, you know, that moment he look and he do that. And then the next day with the cremation. And after a few days, the family come and collect the ashes and put into the wall. And actually the wall is just the wall of the area that we stay. And then her kutis is quite close to the wall. After that, she couldn't sleep. She was really terrified. She's lots of fear. And so one of the ways she helped herself to deal with her fear, you know what she did? She shut herself off. She went to bed at 7. She wake up at 7. Her mind totally shut off. She said, this is how, because she said she can't deal with that. So this is how sometimes we like to sleep, you know, so that we know we don't have to look at the pain. And that's why sometimes people have take alcohol or drugs because of it's too painful, they can't deal with that. So it's unskillful. So they use it as a way to run away from the pain, you know, the problem they have to face because it's painful. It's not easy, you know. Then they use this as a way, you know, and do to escape. So that's why it's enjoy sleeping. You know, and enjoy with the drowsiness, because when you're drowsy, you're not awake, so you will not think of that your problem anymore. So this is one of the way. So if you always do that, we're bound by that. So we will not have growth in the Dharma. We will not progress in our practice. So the Buddha says this is the fourth, and this is the fourth checkers in the heart that he has not severed. So again, a bhikkhu lives the holy life, aspiring to some order of gods. Thus, by the virtue of observance or asceticism or holy life, I shall become a great god or some lesser god. Or thus, his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. As his mind does not incline to other devotion, perseverance, and striving, this is the fifth shackles in the heart that he has not severed. So these are the five shackles in the heart that he has not severed, the Buddha said. So the fifth one is that you sometimes people pray, you know, to the God, and that they thought that they do some all this practice, then they want to reborn into the heavenly realm. They don't want to be, you know, that they have no interest. So you still want to be exist. They're still craving to be exist, you know, in a heavenly realm. So then, if you have that, you're still bound by that. I know one of my friends, many years ago, my Dharma friends, she said to me that she don't want to attain Nirvana. She said she want to be a god. She want to reborn in heavenly realm. She said that's why her main purpose of offering lots of dhanas, doing all the Dharma work, for her intention is to reborn in heaven. She told me, she said, you know, I only want to reborn in heaven. So for her, this is her intention. So she bound by that. You know, she just want to reborn in, she still want to come back. You know, she doesn't want to, she still want to exist. So when we want to be, then we come back again and again. So we bound by that. So no escape. So then we will not have any progress in the practice. It's impossible that, you know, we have fulfillment in the Dhamma and the discipline. So these are the five shackles in the heart that he has not severed. So bhikkhus, that any bhikkhus, so basically this explains all the suttas. Now it's just a repeat. So I just read the repeat. Bhikkhus, that any bhikkhu who has abandon five wilderness in the heart and severed five shackles in the heart should come to growth, increase, and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline that is possible. What bhikkhus are the five wilderness in the heart that he has abandoned? Here a bhikkhu he is not doubtful, uncertain, undecided, or unconfidence about the teacher, and thus his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving, as his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving, and the first wilderness in the heart has been abandoned by him. And then again, because he's not doubtful, uncertain, undecided, or unconfidence about the Dhamma, as his mind inclines to others, perseverance, striving, devotion, the second wilderness in the heart has been abandoned by him. Again, a bhikkhu is not doubtful, uncertain, undecided, or unconfident about the Sangha, as his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, striving, is the third wilderness in the heart has been abandoned by him. Again, a bhikkhu is not doubtful, uncertain, undecided, or unconfident about the training, and his mind inclines to other perseverance, devotion, striving. This fourth wilderness in the heart has been abandoned by him. Again, a bhikkhu is not angry and displeased with his companions in the holy life, nor resentful and callous towards them, and thus his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving, as his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. This fifth wilderness in the heart has been abandoned by him. So these are the five wilderness in the heart that he has abandoned. So what, bhikkhus, are the five shackles in the heart that he has severed? Here, a bhikkhu is free from lust, desire, affection, thirst, fever, and craving for sensual pleasure, and thus his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. As his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving, this first shackles in the heart has been severed by him. Again, a bhikkhu is free from lust, desire, affection, thirst, fever, and craving for the body, as his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, striving. This second shackle in the heart has been severed by him. Again, a bhikkhu is free from lust, desires, affection, thirst, fever, and craving for form, as his mind inclines to other perseverance, devotions, striving. these shackles in the heart has been severed by him. Again, a pig does not eat as much as he likes until his belly is full and does not indulge in the pleasure of sleeping, lolling, and drowsing as his mind inclines to other perseverance, devotion, striving. This fourth shackles in the heart has been severed by him. Again, a pig does not live the holy life expiring to some order of God's task by this virtue of observance or asceticism or holy life, I shall become great God or some lesser God, and thus his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving as his mind inclines to other devotion, perseverance, and striving. This fifth shackles in the heart has been severed by him. These are the five shackles in the heart that he has severed. So, because the any bhikkhu who has abandoned these five wilderness in the heart and severed these five shackles in the heart should come to growth, increase, and fulfillment in this Dhamma and discipline that is possible. So he developed the basis of spiritual power and consisting in concentration due to zeal and determined striving. He develops the basis of spiritual power consisting of in concentration due to energy and determined striving. He developed the basis of spiritual power and consisting in concentration due to purity of mind and determined striving. He develops the basis of spiritual power consists in concentration due to investigation and determined striving. And enthusiasm is the fifth. So that is the Buddha said about this, the Idipada, that is the four roads to success, the four roads to power. So that is this is the Jnana Tiloka explanations of this Idipada. That is Idi, that means it's power, a magical power. And sometimes they translate as this heroic power, heroic, you know. Arouse that, because for example we inspire and we arouse that energy. So that is the, they said that is the Idipada's roots to power consists of four qualities. These four qualities that they indicate the root to power connected therewith, and because the form by way of preparations, the root to the power constituting the fruits of the path, namely concentration of intention. Then you have this intention accompanied by effort of will. That's why sometimes when we start, we have to have a little bit of will, good will, you know, accompanied by the effort of will. You know, we have this determination. So we have this will to do the practice. That is that it means by chanda samadhi. That's called chanda samadhi. That you consent. Do this, you know, like for us, for example, like for the bhikkhu and bhikkhunis, like we'd not be able to attend the, for example, we have the sangha karma, so we will send our consent, okay, please, you know, my consent of whatever you discuss, so I give my chanda. They also translate as a concentration of intention, accompanied by effort of will. So concentrations of energy, the virya samadhi. So the samadhi based on this energy, that is the virya, that's a kind of heroic energy. So the concentrations of based on the is a chitta samadhi, that is concentration of consciousness, and the concentration of investigation accompanied by effort or will. So this is the Idipada. So when you got to have the desire, like the someone went to Ananda, asked, you know, that you got to have the desires to do the practice. So you got to have the desires to abandon the desires that leads us to rebirth. So that is these desires. So it's not all desires is no good. So a lot of people think that Arahant is like a vegetables, you know. They have no feelings, no desires. So if you have no desires, we will not eat, we will starve to death. So if we have no desires, we can't go to the toilet. So it's not all desires that have the results, you know, that's just desires to do the practice. So when they have the desires, then you start to arouse the energy. For example, you have the desires to come here to listen to come here for this sutta class. So you got these desires, isn't it? To do the to listen to the Dharma. Then you arouse the energy. So this is a noble energy, noble power. Is that it's relate to the fruits, relate to the path. This relate to the freedom. That is the wholesome energy. It's not those kind of energy that we arouse, you know, to get something, you know, to try to hurt someone. That kind of energy that is unwholesome. But this is the wholesome. You arouse the energy, so you got to have to arouse the energy to put forth effort to come here, isn't it? Then you have to apply the mind, you know. Oh yes, this is what I'm going to do. Come here. Then you investigate, you know, how. You have to plan how to come here, isn't it? And that is the four edict, this is the edipada. This is four roots to a power. So the Buddha said, and the last one, enthusiasm. So we have to have the enthusiasm. Then only we'll be able to continue to keep, you know, to have the perseverance, because it's important, because we have been wandering in the samsara countless lifetime. So that's why sometimes when we read the suttas, they say, the Buddha gave the teaching to this, his monk, you know, his disciple, oh, no long time, and they become an arahant and things. Then we say, wow, it's so easy. So maybe for the Buddhas, no long time might be 20 years, 30 years, and no long time. So, because if you compare to the time that, you know, the countless lifetime that we're in the samsara, actually 20, 30 years is no long time. So they say you need to have the enthusiasm, you know, to keep going. So sometimes you get, you know, sometimes you think that we're getting nowhere, you know, have no progress, and then we put off, you know, then not to continue to practice, because it's a lifetime practice. You keep practicing, so we need to have the enthusiasm, you know, to keep practicing. Then this is the fifth. So a bhikkhu who thus possesses the 15 factors, including enthusiasm, is capable of picking up, capable of enlightenment, capable of attaining the supreme security from bondage. Suppose there were a hen with 8, 10, 12 eggs, which she has covered, incubated, and nurtured properly, even though she did not wish, oh, that my chicks might pierce their shells with the points of their claws and pigs and hatch out safely. Yet the chicks are capable of piercing the shells with the points of the claws and the pigs and hatching out safely. So too, a bhikkhu who thus possesses 15 factors, including enthusiasm, is capable of pricking up, capable of enlightenment, capable of attaining supreme security from bondage. That is like, it's just like the Buddha gives the simile of like the hand sitting on the egg. It's just like the practice. If you sit long enough, whether you want it or not, whether you want to get enlightened or not, it's going to happen. You don't have to wish that may I get enlightened. No. If you follow the teaching of the Buddha, you follow the instruction, so you put forth into practice, that is the result of that. So the Buddha's teaching of non-self, we can't make it happen, it's happened by itself. So the hands don't have to wish that may my eggs hatch, you know. It was hatched by itself, whether you want it or not. So whether you want to get enlightened or not, you will get enlightened. So if you are following the path, and if you are on the path, it's just a matter of time. You just keep practicing. That is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So that is the end of this sutta. So, any questions or comments? Yes.
Out of these five shackles, out of these five shackles, is there any
one more important, or let's say supreme.
Actually, it's not one vision is important. It's just like some people have particular, like, more strong with this. They say it's important when we read the sutras, so we know for ourselves, this is our weak point, you know. Maybe we are more, you know, some people more attached to the body, and this is your problem, you know. This is my problem. So you put more effort, like, you know, this is the area that you need to work with. So, because different people, they have different attachment, you know, different defilements. Like sometimes, this is a problem to someone, then it's not a problem to the other person. So this is why it's important when we read these sutras, then we know that why, you know, we check. So what are the areas that we need to improve? So is it answer your question? Yeah. So it's not whether the Buddha said as long as you have these shackles, you are bound by that. So some people might not have the maybe the fifth one is not strong. They totally do not never want to become a reborn in the heavenly realm. But maybe sometimes people like to sleep a lot. Then this is something that we need to work with. So then we have to look at which areas that we always have problem with. Then this area that we have to work with, you know, that's to improve.
Yeah. So from that sutra, we can see that the attempt is welcome to conquer those attachments, inferior attachments, by attachment to the practice,
uh-huh.
to the Dharma. So is there any step in development of practice where you have to conquer attachment to the knowledge and to the practice itself? Mm-hmm. Is there any such state? Such level where you have to renounce even attachment to the practice, to the knowledge.
Can you repeat again? I can't really get.
So to conquer basic attachments, uh-huh. which Buddha talks here.
About the attachment, you mean?
Yeah, those five cycles.
Okay.
So we have to cultivate. Attachment to the practice,
yeah.
to the knowledge,
yeah.
And with the help of that attachment, we overcome inferior attachments.
Yes, yeah. That's what the Buddha
said. So, is there any further if someone practicing successfully and he's making good progress? Mm-hmm. Is there such situation where the practitioner has to renounce even attachment to the practice and to the knowledge? To get to the ultimate liberation.
Oh, this I understand. So, yeah, actually, someone asked me the same questions too. That's about like how you know that you at the beginning you still have that because we cannot just say that let go, you know. So sometimes that you attach to the wholesome things rather than attach to the unwholesome things. So then we let go of the causer. Happiness, the lesser happiness, then for the greater happiness. It's just like a stair, a ladder we climb up. So we let go of that. So of course we still attach. We still attach to wholesome, you know, because we are not enlightened yet. You know, unless you're enlightened, you still have sense of self. You still have the attachment to sense of self. But you can tell the difference. For example, like after you have practiced, your sense of self become more fluid. You still have the sense of self. You still attached to yourself. But at least you can see that you're happier. You're more relaxed. You know, you can see that, you know that, you know, like if someone happens take up the practice, to them, the sense of self is so solid, so concrete. You know, whatever unwholesome state, they're just... impulsively react and create more suffering from themselves. But you know for yourself, like for example, like some situation that in the past that caused you lots of suffering, but now you're more relaxed and more at ease. That is the progress. Because it's the Buddha said this is a gradual training. It will not happen overnight. So of course we cannot say let go. There's a lot of people try to do the letting go. You can't do the letting go. the letting go is happened by itself. So you just little by little. So that's why it's a gradual training. For example, we have to let go of the like renounce, for example. So why the Buddha emphasis of generosity, sila, you know, and samadhi and panya? Because generosity helps us to let go. Like, for example, we give away the material things that is a causer, you know, causer level, the things outside us, you know, the material things. Then we practice that. Then we can renounce, we can let go that. So when we can let go that, if we can't let go the material things, we can't let go the more subtle defilements, isn't it? So this is how it's a gradual training. So we let go that. Then after we be able to do that, then we practice letting go of the causer, then we come to more subtle one. Then we let go of our defilements like greed, hatred and delusion. So this you cannot stop it immediately. So because if we can use willpower to stop it immediately, then the Buddha's teaching of non-self is not the truth. It's just like, for example, you have these defilements. When you react to the defilements, it's just like you're kicking the wheel when you react. So when you kicking, when you react, your defilements reinforce the defilements, isn't it? The defilements become greater. So when you don't react, doesn't mean that your defilements go away immediately. It's still there. So that means that you are not kicking the wheel. But the wheel is still spinning. But the energy becomes slower. This is how to practice. Like each time, your defilements kick out. The defilements kick out. So we do not react to the defilements. Doesn't mean that we don't have defilements. This defilements is still there. But the energies become weaker. So the more we do that each time, you know, then it's become weaker and weaker, weaker, and it stops by itself. If you leave the wheel by itself, it spins, 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 you know. If you stop kicking it, it stops by itself, isn't it? You don't have to do anything. This is why the Buddha said about you sit on the hand sitting on the eggs. So you eventually, that's how. So a lot of people think that you cannot say abandon. No, it's a gradual training. Because we've been conditioned countless lifetimes. This habitual pattern is very ingrained. So we have to retrain the mind, you know, to go to the others, you know, direct the mind, you know, to the wholesome. Of course, we still attach to the wholesome. So eventually, you know, when we go beyond wholesome and unwholesome, we don't even attach to wholesome. That is the enlightenment. That is the goal. That is the nirvana. Of course, we still have the attached, like just what you said, because we cannot just let go, you know, immediately. So this is a gradual training. So is that answer your questions? It makes sense to you? Okay. Is there any more question? Comments? Yes. The wisdom arises when the mind is still. When that is, because when you have these five entrances and it's cloud the mind. So when your mind is cloudy, it's very simple. You don't have to have reached the state of absorption. It's just like, for example, sometimes you are confused and you really stress out and you can't think of a way to solve your problem. So when you walk away, you put it aside and you make your mind as peaceful as possible. Then you, I think how to solve the problem. Because you can't, your mind, you don't have the clarity. So when you're confused, don't try to make any decision when you're confused. So you have to make your mind as peaceful as possible. your mind as peaceful as possible and very calm. When you're calm, you can think, isn't it? You have the clarity. That is where when you have abandoned the five hindrances, the mind is clear. It's just like the moon is so bright. The mind is very bright without the cloud. But with the five hindrances, it's covered, the moon, and it's not bright. The mind, that is where your wisdom arises, through abandoning the five hindrances. When you have a peaceful mind, then where's the wisdom arises, the insight arises. Is that answer your question? Okay. Okay. Is there any more questions? Okay. So we finish, then we pay respect to the Buddha and